Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Movie Addict Headquarters with your host, Betty Jo Tucker, author of Confessions of a Movie Addict, right here at www.blogtalkradio.com.
Hi, all you movie fans out there. This is Betty Jo Tucker thanking you for tuning in to Movie Addict Headquarters. You don't have to be a movie addict to visit here, of course, but if you are one, it's definitely the place for you. Our show today, folks, should be very interesting for movie fans because we'll be talking about the best films of 2012 with two of my favorite film critics, Susan Granger and John P. McCarthy. These two really know their stuff where movies are concerned. Susan was born into a film business family and raised in Hollywood. She even appeared as a child actress in movies with stars like Red Skelton and Lucille Ball, Abbott and Costello, and Lassie. Her articles have been published in numerous outlets, including the New York Times, Cinemag, Casting, and Cosmopolitan. John has extensive experience writing movie reviews for scores of newspapers around the country through his company, Cineman Syndicate. He also contributes film criticism to outlets such as BoxOffice.com, America Magazine, and the Catholic News Service. Now, I can hardly wait to hear if any of my favorite 2012 films make their top 10 lists. But before bringing Susan and John on, I want to tell all our listeners that the chat room is open, and Nikki isn't here yet, but there have been some technical difficulties, so she'll probably be popping in later on. But I encourage any listeners who want to sign up to the chat to be sure and do that. And we do have already three guests who haven't identified themselves, but they are in the chat room. We welcome them, and we really appreciate the people who sign up for the chat, as well as our other listeners. Now, I see that both Susan and John, who have both been our guests before, are here, and they're on the line, so let's bring them on now. Ladies first, so I'm going to right now see if I can get Susan on, and I'm going to say, welcome back to Movie Addict Headquarters, Susan.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you for asking me. I love to talk movies.
I know you do. I mean, I think you're a movie addict, just like I am, and it's always great to have a fellow movie addict on the show, and so great to have you with us again. Susan, I understand you were planning on attending the Jack Reacher premiere in New York last night, but it was canceled. Could you bring us up to date on that?
Based action thriller.
Susan, pardon me. I think we didn't hear the first part of what you said. So you're talking about Jack Reacher and why the premiere was canceled? Go ahead.
Yes. Tom Cruise stars in this fast-paced, action-packed thriller. It's based on One Shot, which is the ninth in the series of Lee Child's best-selling novels. And it revolves around this very cool character called Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
Now, before we go any further, I have to give full disclosure. My son, Don Granger, produced this movie.
So,
I'm proud of him.
He's a producer.
That's why I was going to the premiere in New York. And since this is an action thriller and it begins with a sniper at a parking garage in Pittsburgh, it just didn't seem right during this week of mourning to have a celebratory premiere at Lincoln Center. So the Film Society of Lincoln Center decided to postpone it, just the way they postponed the original premiere, which was to be in Pittsburgh, last Saturday. That's when the movie was made, and they postponed it to Wednesday night.
I see. Well, that's I think, a good idea.
I think it was a very sensitive way to handle it.
I do, too. I really appreciate that. And I just have the feeling, though, because I have read a review about Jack Reacher, Frank Wilkins turned in his review to our site, and he gave it rave reviews. It looks like another successful Tom Cruise film, one that his fans will love. So
from your mouth to God's ear.
Yes, but I know how hard it is to concentrate really on any movies when we're all still just devastated by that terrible massacre in Newtown, Connecticut. And our thoughts and prayers go out to all the family and friends of those innocent little victims who lost their precious lives.
Absolutely, and I think Hollywood has been sensitive to it. They postponed the premiere of Parental Guidance. That was done by 20th Century Fox, and Django Unchained. So people are really, and Django is such a violent Western that, people are really backing off for the time being on this in deference to the great sadness.
Yes, I think that is, as you said, a very sensitive thing to do, to cancel the New York premiere. And speaking of New York, let's bring on John P. McCarthy now. He's been very, very patient. John lives in New York City, and I was very worried about him during that terrible Sandy, what did they call it, Frankenstorm. John, how are things in your neighborhood now?
Oh, things are fine, Betty Jo. Things are getting back to normal, so, really can't complain. Thank you for having me on the show again.
Well, we're so glad you're safe and sound and that you could be with us. It's wonderful to have you back on the show. But now let's find out if you and Susan agree on the top 10 movies of 2012. Listeners, what I'm going to ask is for Susan and John to just go through and name their top 10 movies, and then I'll give my top 10, and then we'll see if there are any similarities, and go back and talk about those and about any of the movies that Susan and John would want to highlight. So, Susan, why don't you start by sharing your list with us?
I will, and mine is in alphabetical order.
Yay.
So let's begin with Argo, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, The Dark Knight Rises, Les Miserables, Life of Pi, Lincoln, Moonrise Kingdom, Skyfall, and Zero Dark Thirty.
What a diverse list. I really am impressed by your selections. Not necessarily in it doesn't look too much like my list, but it's an excellent list. And John, let's hear from you. What are your top 10 now? Speak a little slowly, because I'm going to write them down while you're saying them. Okay.
Well, there's quite a bit of overlap with Susan's, which I'll let people judge whether that's good or bad. And my list is arranged from 1 to 10, so from my most favorite film, to the 10th. And number 1 is Beast of the Southern Wild. Number 2 is Lincoln. Number 3 is Bernie. Number 4 is The Kid with a Bike. Number 5 is Argo. Number 6 is Middle of Nowhere. Number 7, Zero Dark Thirty. Number 8 is Looper. 9, Cabin in the Woods. And finally, number 10, The Master.
Cabin in the Woods is 9. And number 10, The Master. Let me read those again and make sure that I have all of them. Beasts of the Southern Wild, Lincoln, Burn Me, The Kid with a Bike, Argo, Middle of Nowhere, Zero Dark Thirty, Lincoln, Cabin in the Woods, and The Master. Now, do I have all of those?
Well,
okay,
number eight is Looper, not Lincoln.
Oh, I see. Looper. Oh, the
Looper
sci-fi.
Is number 8, and Lincoln is number 2 on my list. So.
Okay. Very good. There's some some movies in there I haven't even heard of that I'm going to ask you about later, but I'm going to give my list right now, and my list is not complete because I haven't seen Django Unchained or Zero Dark Thirty yet. I'm always so jealous of you two because you get to see all these movies before they open wide. So I'm kind of waiting to finalize it until I see those two movies. And I don't have any order in this. It's kind of what just popped out, you know, as I was trying to pick 10 movies at this point that I thought were the best. The Impossible, Les Miserables, Silver Linings, Playbill, The Hunger Games, that was released earlier, Bernie, A Royal Affair, that's a foreign language film, The Five-Year Engagement, The Tall Man, Snow White and the Huntsman, and The Campaign. Now, I'm perfectly aware that my list is very lowbrow, but that's it. I have to call them like I see them. Well, let's see if we have any similarities here. Lots of similarities between your list, Susan, and John's list, Beast of the Southern Wild, Lincoln, Argo, and Zero Dark Thirty. So one, two, so four. And then the only film that, Susan, that you and I have agreed on is Les Miserables. And, John, you left that off your list. Why did you leave that off your list?
Well, I enjoyed the ending very much, and I was moved by it, but I was not – too many of the – vocal performances didn't do it for me, and I'm thinking in particular of Russell Crowe. And there were even times when Hugh Jackman's voice didn't quite do it, although he really nailed the climactic song. And one thing I suppose we should tell the listeners is that this was done, Les Mis was done differently than most film musicals in that the actors were actually singing the songs when they were being filmed, and it wasn't lip synced and the music put in later. And I think that makes a huge difference in a positive sense for the acting and for the emotions. And maybe sometimes they're not always hitting their notes, just let's say, although I think Russell Crowe doesn't quite have the voice to do this, but anyway, will be positive from here on out.
Well, I agree with you about Hugh Jackman. I didn't think that this was was his best performance, but I thought he did a great job, and I felt very, very strongly about Russell Crowe and his voice, because I didn't think he could sing at all, I guess. And when he first came out and he sang, I thought, my gosh, he's really great. What about you, Susan?
You were pleasantly surprised.
Yes, I was surprised. I was definitely
Well, you know,
surprised.
I have to admit one thing. Les Miserables is not one of my favorite shows. So I went in thinking this is an overly long, anguished movie, which it is. But I did put it on my top 10 because I think they did it brilliantly. If you love Les Mis, which audiences around the world seem to feel that way, this is a brilliant interpretation of it. That having been said, it is anguished, unrestrained, relentlessly amplified, overwhelming, and even exhausting.
Well, I think that's true, but I was so impressed, just shocked at the way it was transferred to the screen, the way they opened it up and made it so cinematic. And
that's why it's on my list.
Yes, yes, it's just quite a spectacle to see. And of course, I'm the world's. I think both of you know I'm the world's most avid movie musical fan. But when I think of movie musicals, I think of singing and dancing, and you know, happy times. And Les Mis was definitely not your typical Hollywood musical, but it did. I mean, some of that music in Les Mis is just so heartbreaking and so haunting, and Just stays with you.
By the way, Betty Jo, one thing we should maybe mention about it is that, and I, although it's not on my top 10 list, I thought Anne Hathaway was fantastic, and I think she's destined to get an Oscar nomination as the Best Supporting Actress.
So, I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think there are some
high points in the movie, no question.
Yes. I think she definitely will be one of the nominees for an Oscar for Best Supporting, and there's no doubt about that. Well, I noticed that both of you had The Beasts of the Southern Wild, and you also had Argo as your on your list. So, Susan, do you want to talk about either one of those and explain to our listeners why those two movies are on your list?
Well, I would love to. I think Argo is one of the best movies I've ever seen. Ben Affleck did a great job of putting together what is an amazing, astonishing story.
Excuse me, Susan. We're getting some feedback, and I'm wondering if that's bothering you. Do you hear some feedback?
I can't hear it.
You can't hear it. Okay, it's over now. So go ahead. Argo is one of the best movies ever made. Go ahead.
One of the best. I think that's going up. That's a lot of hyperbole, but it's certainly, in my opinion, one of the best of the year. And it tells an amazing true story about getting prisoners out of Iraq. Out of Iran, because they were in Tehran when they were captured. And it's got humor. And it's just got all the ingredients that it needs. Beasts of a Southern Wild is totally different. This is a small art house movie that's made about a little 6-year-old African-American girl. Actually, it was supposed to be a boy, but when the little girl tested for it, they changed the part to that of a girl.
Oh.
And I think if people are wondering why it's been left off the Screen Actors Guild list and the Golden Globes, it's interesting that it was cast with non-actors. Now, what that means is he found young actors that have not registered with the Screen Actors Guild. The Screen Actors Guild is a union. And obviously, as a union, they don't want to acknowledge movies that use non-union people. So that's why it was left off that list.
I see. And that's a movie that that John has on his list, too.
John, what do you want to add about that?
Well, it's such an original, risky movie about this daughter and her ailing father in sort of the edge of the bayou in southern Louisiana. And it's sort of got everything. I mean, there's a poetic script. The visuals are amazing. The story has kind of a mythic character to it. And these two characters are just so vivid, and you really can't take your eyes off them. And I think it's sort of a timely, relevant fable about, you know, our relationship to nature, for one thing, and a big storm comes in. Speaking of storms and hurricanes, that figures prominently in the plot. And then, you know, there's a small community that this daughter and father live in called the Bathtub, and it's amazing to see the way that people take care of each other, but also how independent they are. To me, it was by far, you know, I don't like to rank movies, and it's difficult to rank them, but it's, for me, it's head and shoulders above all the other movies I saw this year in terms of sort of the emotional impact it had on me and the craft of it. Technically, I thought it was done so well, and it's by a first-time director named Ben Zeitlin, and yet there's a lot of meaty stuff to consider. So it really blew me away, and it came out quite a few months ago. I think it was in the spring. So that and the Screen Actors Guild rules that Susan discussed maybe why it was an early favorite, I think, for the awards, and it's now slipping for one reason, because a lot of good movies have come along since.
Yes, but it was very impressive, and the cinematography was outstanding, I thought, in that particular film.
Right.
And you also both had Zero Dark 30 and Lincoln on your list. So we need to say something about each of those movies. Susan, which one of those would you like to talk about, Lincoln or Zero Dark Thirty?
Well, I think Lincoln, because it just I just thought it was so incredible. You know, Steven Spielberg, in my book, can do no wrong. And he tackled a project that was so difficult because he didn't do it like a biopic. He just picked a small segment in Lincoln's life where he was trying to get the 13th Amendment passed. And what impressed me is what a terrific politician, wheeling and dealing, Lincoln was. And this is something that people just don't know about him. They always think of him as this staid figure, you know, in a chair in the Lincoln Memorial. And he was a storyteller. He was a raconteur. He was a wheeler dealer. He used bribery. I mean, it was just, it's fascinating.
It was, and it was another long movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was very long, but it wasn't.
What's your money's worth on these movies?
And it certainly wasn't anything like Abraham Lincoln, the vampire hunter, the vampire killer, that's for sure.
Speaking of one of the worst of the year.
That probably would be on people's worst of the year. Well, what about Zero Dark Thirty? This is one that I haven't seen, John. Why is that on your list?
Well, Zero Dark Thirty is sort of what you might call an intelligence procedural as opposed to a police procedural, and it follows. It's by Catherine Bigelow and Michael Bohl, who made The Hurt Locker a couple years ago, which won Best Picture. And basically they compressed 10 years or 12 years of intelligence gathering by the CIA, in particular one woman. So it's all fact-based. It's very much like a docudrama in some ways. And the search for Osama bin Laden. And so it goes basically from the beginning, when you hear recordings of people suffering during the attacks on 9/11, all the way up until Osama bin Laden is killed by SEAL Team 6. So in a sense, you know how it's going to end, but it is brilliantly made. I mean, nobody really stages action and the way we fight these days better than Catherine Bigelow, I think. There's some, I wouldn't say controversy about it, but it takes a very hard, frank look at the torture methods that the CIA and the U.S. government used, especially over the first 45 minutes. And so there's some sort of question whether people think it endorses it or raises questions about whether the intelligence that was gathered through those brutal means really led to us finding Osama bin Laden. And I would say that the movie, from a political point of view, is quite neutral, but it's like a Rorschach test for the viewer, because I think everybody reads into it, sees what they or interprets it the way they want to from their own point of view, which I think is an amazing and good thing for a movie to do. My qualms about it are that I don't think you necessarily learn anything more than you know now if you've watched 60 Minutes or just, you know, sort of casually kept up on the headlines. But the way it's put together, and Jessica Chastain, who plays the lead, the CIA agent, is fantastic. She's brilliant.
The only thing I don't think came out before this is that this one woman who was discriminated against because she was a woman and considered beneath the other agents, it was her tenacity that made this happen. And she was the only one that went up to the president and said, 100%, this is where he is, go in and make the raid.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Susan. There's that angle of the story that I didn't mention, and we have not heard about before, and that adds another layer onto it. I mean, the way the drama, the way they make it a character study too, is quite amazing. So people are going to be hearing a lot about Zero
Dark
opening
30. Christmas Day, John, is that Christmas?
It's Christmas Day, I believe. Or it could be tomorrow, actually. I think it may be tomorrow in L.A. and New York and then expanding on Christmas Day. So
I think it'll
be here soon.
Well, that I'm looking forward to seeing after hearing both of you talk about that. And was there anything, any movie on your list, Susan, that that you would like to talk about that we haven't?
Well, there are a couple of, let's put it, lighter movies, like The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, which I loved. And, by the way, if I may just add one thing, because that was about older people, there are two movies that are coming out that are not really in Oscar contention and best of contention, but are quite wonderful if you're interested in older people and how they react to things. One is called A Late Quartet. The other one is called Quartet. And they shouldn't be confused. Why they put two films out with similar names, I have no idea. But yeah. I probably would have added both of those because for older people, A Late Quartet is about a string quartet in New York, and Christopher Walken is in it.
Oh, great.
And it's just wonderful. And Quartet is Dustin Hoffman's first directing job, and it stars Maggie Smith and Billy Connolly, and it's about retired opera singers. So
and it's on my list of honorable mentions. I just
yes.
saw it the other day, and what a beautiful little film it is. And I'm so glad that you mentioned Quartet.
And I love Dark Knight Rises. It's an action-adventure, the way Skyfall is. And the other one I guess I had that other people didn't have is Moonrise Kingdom.
Yes,
fantasy about children.
Yes. So from the younger to the older, Moonrise Kingdom definitely had a whimsical look to it and was the very different, unusual film, and I enjoyed that one too. Well, I just kind of I'm out of it because you agreed on four or five movies. And I've only got Les Miserables on there with you, Susan. I just can't believe that.
And I think, Betty Jo, we have Bernie.
And Bernie is delightful. You know, I saw it again yesterday because my husband hadn't seen it. And we got the DVD, and I got to tell you, I really enjoyed it again.
Oh, good. Bernie, that's right. John, you and I put Bernie on our top 10 list, and I'm not completely out of it. Now, for Jack Black fans, if you have to see Bernie, because it's his best performance ever, and it's talk about an unusual movie. You've got a very jovial funeral parlor director who gets involved with a much older woman played by Shirley MacLaine, and it really is not a pretty sight, but it's just. It's just a movie. You get into the characters, and you're just spellbound by it. So I'm really happy that's on your list, John, and that you liked it, Susan. And I would encourage Jack Black fans to see that. But I don't know why The Impossible isn't making it on people's lists or getting very many nominations in these critics groups. And I just think it's a movie that moved me more than any other movie that I've seen all year. And again, it's a storm. It's a storm movie.
That's
it's about the family surviving a tsunami and the family struggling to keep together. And it just really went straight to my heart. And I know that The Campaign is an unusual choice to put on your top 10. But we need something light, and I think that's one of the funniest movies that I've ever seen. I just absolutely laughed from beginning to end. So did my husband. So did my daughter. I know it's a little bit too raunchy. My inner church lady rebelled a little bit, but it was just
and it was,
so.
You know, it was perfectly timed before the election this year.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Exactly. And so these lists show that move with. That the movies that we think are the best are very personal lists. It's a wonder, really, with all the movies out that people do to come together in these critics groups and are able to make some sense out of it all. Well, why don't we talk? We've talked a little bit about the performances that we've liked. We've mentioned a couple of people, but let's zero in on the actors and actresses that we think gave the best performances this past year. Susan, you want to start on that?
Well, I will, but you know, there's one performance that for me is so far above the others, and I always do 10, so I mean I can give it to you, but I don't think anybody comes anywhere near Daniel Day-Lewis for Lincoln.
I agree.
Oh, that people are really, really talking about that performance.
I mean, I can go through my list, but he is, I mean, this is so far above anyone else. I'll just go through it quickly if you want.
Okay.
Bradley Cooper is awfully good in Silver Linings Playbook. Richard Gere for Arbitrage. John Hawkes for The Sessions. Anthony Hopkins for Hitchcock. Frank Langella for a movie that very few people saw, but I thought it was delicious, called Robot and Frank. Hugh Jackman for Les Miserables. Bill Murray for Hyde Park on Hudson. Joaquin Phoenix for The Master, and Denzel Washington for Flight.
Well, that's quite a list. How about you, John?
Well, I've got a few of those same names on my list, and I've sort of mixed together leading and supporting performances. But just to go back to the starting point, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln is really he's amazing, and it's hard to sort of second guess anything about his performance. It's just so his method approach really, really works. I also had John Hawkes in The Sessions as a paraplegic man looking to find some physical connection with another human being. He's amazing, and he's such a versatile actor. He happens to also have a small role in Lincoln as well. Denzel Washington in Flight. Jack Black and Bernie.
Yay.
Leonardo DiCaprio in Django Unchained, although it's a supporting and not a leading performance, I thought was very good. Dwight Henry in Beasts of the Southern Wild. Here's one, Jude Law in Anna Karenina. And again, it's not a leading performance, but I thought he was quite good. Tommy Lee Jones in Lincoln.
Now,
Ezra
I agree
Miller.
With that, but I think Tommy Lee Jones should get a supporting actor nomination.
Yeah, and in fact, the next couple ones I have are really more, I only did sort of five in each, are really more supporting. Ezra Miller in The Perks of Being a Wallflower. I think he's a young actor who's done a lot of great stuff so far, and we'll be talking about him in 10 years as a leading actor. And then there's the British theater actor Simon Russell Beale in The Deep Blue Sea as a lord who is, he's an aristocrat who is left by his wife, who's played by Rachel Weisz, and I thought he was fantastic. And then Joaquin Phoenix in a leading role in The Master. He's just one of those people that whenever you put a camera on him, it's hard not to watch.
You know, there's a name we've left off here, and I don't think he stands a chance. But I do think this year Matthew McConaughey was so wonderful in not only in Magic Mike, but in Bernie, in supporting roles.
That's
right. He was good in Bernie. He definitely was good in Bernie. I was surprised because I didn't even recognize him in that. And what about the actresses, John?
Well, I have, and again, I'm sort of mixing together leads and supporting performances, but Jessica Chastain in Zero Dark Thirty, the young girl in Beasts of the Southern Wild, and I'm not sure how to pronounce her first name, Kwizane Wallace. I'm sure.
Yes.
Butchered that first name.
I agree
Amy
with
Adams.
Both of those, and I'm glad I don't have to try that name.
Amy Adams in The Master. We've already talked about Anne Hathaway as a supporting candidate for supporting Oscar in Les Mis. I thought Frances McDormand was great in Promised Land. Again, a supporting performance. Mm-hmm. Emma Watson in The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Sally Field in Lincoln. I think she really nailed that and really stood up to him. I mean, she's an actress capable of standing up to Daniel Day-Lewis and the President of the United States.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then I've got two performances from the same movie, Middle of Nowhere, which is about a young woman in South Central L.A. who's dealing with her husband being incarcerated for about 8 years. And it's really a small, quiet, fascinating study of what happens with this woman. And the protagonist is named Ruby, and she's played by Emma Atzi-Corneldi, and she's fantastic. And then an actress who we've all probably seen on TV, might not be able to put a name to the face, but Lorraine Toussaint plays her mother. And she's fantastic. I don't think either of them stand a chance of being nominated for an Oscar, but I did want to mention them.
Oh well, that's a great list. I don't have a list that long, but I really fell in love with Jack Black's performance in Bernie, and I'm rooting for him, although I know he doesn't have a chance with Daniel Day-Lewis. And I thought that everyone in The Impossible, Naomi Watts, Ewan McGregor, and Tom Holland were just perfect in their roles. I liked very much Jennifer Lawrence in Silver Linings Playbook, plus Michelle Williams in Take This Waltz. And I think we have some comments from the chat room that Nikki wants to share with us. So I'm going to see if we can get her on. She's in. Hello, Nikki. You're back with us.
I am. Sorry about
Yay.
That.
Yay.
I don't know what's going on, but I'm here. I couldn't even see
myself.
We're
glad you're
then
here.
I could. And yeah, here I am. And you guys sound fantastic. Now, you
have
to laugh at me because I actually had just messaged AJ, and I was like, all right, we're on the air. Go ahead and give me some of your favorite movies from 2012. So that I can read them on the air and take credit for them.
that's the Mad Movie Man. You were communicating with the Mad Movie
that's
Man.
Right.
All right. Well, go ahead.
We decided that nobody would believe that they were mine once I give you mine, but you'll laugh. But he said The Gray.
Oh, okay.
I don't
that's
even
William
know.
William Neeson movie about the wolf. He's caught in the wild with the wolves.
Okay.
Right.
And then Hero Dreams of Sushi.
Yes, I know that one.
Okay. Justice League, Doom.
Yeah.
Chronicle.
I thought my list was different. Okay, go ahead.
And then The Cabin in the Woods. So he gave me those five. Let's
and
see.
The
Ooh.
Cabin in the Woods is on is also on John's list. So that's great. And I thank you for delivering that message from the Mad Movie Man.
You're
and
very
I
welcome.
Also...
And then when you hear mine, I have a bunch of people in chat room too, but let me go ahead and give you mine. Oh, no, they might have gotten all disappeared. Oh, no. Now, this is why you guys are going to laugh. AJ and I have this thing going back and forth because, like, if I had read those, which I haven't seen any of those movies, by the way, if I had, well, am I, did he say Avengers? No, he didn't. Did he say Avengers? Anyways, if I had read those as mine, nobody would have believed me because he, like,
no.
I am, no, they wouldn't have it. But I put, don't laugh at me, I don't have 10, but, and really, you guys, just so you know, I'm her producer, and I'm really good at the technical stuff usually, but I'm a huge movie fan because I love it, or I don't, and I couldn't really tell you why. So, I put Hunger Games.
Oh, I have that on my list. Okay.
Okay, good. The Hobbit. Because this is still 2012. The Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Snow White and the Huntsman.
I had that on mine.
Oh, good. Brave.
And that's on my honorable mention. Okay.
Oh, goody. And then Underworld Awakening. Because you know how I am. And then Rock of Ages. So.
Oh, yes, a musical. All right, you have a musical on yours. Good list. I love that. I love that list. And I noticed we do have quite a few people in the chat room that we'd like to welcome. There's Bible Truth by Benny. There's Nancy Lombardo from Comedy Concepts, who has a wonderful, very, very funny show on Blog Talk Radio. We just love her. And
we
have guest 4692 and Wacko Bob from the Wacko Bob Network.
Yes.
Who's doing Christmas shows practically this entire month.
He is. Only thing is, he didn't give me any of his favorite movies. So I am trying hard to get him to do that. Oh, and also Comedy Concepts. So, you know, if they could just give me one.
If they could just give you one, that would be good.
Hurry.
A favorite movie. Well, we've really had lots of fun with seeing how different our opinions are about movies. I'm surprised The Campaign wasn't on your list. It's on mine.
I haven't seen it. Now, let me tell you what. It is going to be on mine. Of course, we interviewed
Catherine Linasa, who played the wife, who played Will Ferrell.
Oh, my goodness. It was one of the funniest interviews ever, and of course I'm a huge Will Ferrell fan, so I just haven't had a chance to see it, but I will. I can't wait, because I laughed at her stories.
Well, I had to have one comedy on the list, so
that's
the one that I went with. Well, thank you so much, Nikki, and thank you to the chatters and to the Mad Movie Man for giving Nikki those suggestions. Well, Susan, have you? I know you don't like to think about worse movies and worse performances, but I think we can get some idea from John. We want to just kind of go to the other extreme and see if there are any ideas about what's the worst movie and the worst performance that you've seen this past year. John, do you have a response to that?
I really haven't come up with a worst movie. I already mentioned, who I thought was very disappointing in a big movie, and that was Russell Crowe in Les Mis. Now, I seem to be in the minority about that, so I won't
push it.
Because he is, he certainly, from an acting point of view, can handle the material, but I just didn't think musically he was up to it. So, but I'm trying to think, get in negative mode and think about worse movies, but I'm having a tough time, actually.
I think the
I'll give you one. I'll give you one. Bachelorette.
Oh.
And I'm going to go to Les Mis for the worst performance. Sacha Baron Cohen, who just took all the humor out of a part that could have given that movie some welcome humor. I thought that was the miscast part of the year. And I cannot believe that we are at the time. Is almost up. I mean, it just went by so fast. And Susan and John, I want to thank you both for being such wonderful guests today. It's always a treat to have you with us. But and I hope that you have a very, very happy holiday season. But I'm going to have to say that this is Betty Jo Tucker giving a big shout out to the folks at Blog Talk Radio for choosing this episode to feature on the homepage today. And to Nikki for everything she does to make hosting Movie Attic Headquarters such fun. Thanks also to our chatters and other listeners for tuning in. I hope everyone enjoyed the show. Please come back next time, which will be on New Year's Day, because we're spending the entire day of Christmas with our families, which is next Tuesday. So do come back, though, on New Year's Day for another spirited conversation about movies. And don't you forget to check out our film reviews at realtalkreviews.com. That's R-E-E-L, realtalkreviews.com. Also, and here's a very shameless plug, there's still time before Christmas to order a copy of Confessions of a Movie Addict for those movie fans on your shopping list. It's available at Amazon.com and in the Amazon Kindle store. Well, that's all for now, folks. So in keeping with the holiday spirit, here's the great Judy Garland to take us out with my favorite song from Meet Me in St. Louis. And this time, it's dedicated to all our wonderful Blog Talk Radio listeners. Thank you.
your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again, as in olden days, happy golden days of until